Rocky Horror Minute is rated R. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is also rated R. We're going to spend this time discussing the movie in gory detail, and along the road, we will talk about some adult content and use some of our favorite swear words.
Take a picture, it'll last longer.
Consider yourselves warned.
Welcome to Rocky Horror Minute, the podcast where we discuss the Rocky Horror Picture Show in excruciating detail 1 minute at a time. I'm one of your hosts, Kelly.
And I'm your other... I don't know.
And she's my significant other.
And I'm your other host, Leandra.
And today we are joined once again by Sean from Next Scene Pod.
I'm listening to reason. No, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Once again, I'm so glad to be here. I'm very excited to talk about Minute 73.
Yeah, we're honored that you've chosen to spend your last moments with us.
They might be long last moments. We don't know.
They might, yeah. It might be like in that stupid Doctor Who episode that we watched where... they had one night left together, but then it turned out to be that the night is 27 years on that planet.
Kelly is a huge fan.
I'm not against some of it, but Leandra and I watched a really stupid Christmas special that was River Song based, and I do hate River Song very much, from the little bit of understanding I have. Listeners, if you understand the ending of that episode and you can explain it to me in a way that makes any sense, please leave it in a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or email us. That pissed me off. Anyway, Leandra, what happens in Minute 73 of the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I mean, precious little about Doctor Who. So, sorry to disappoint you, Kelly. You are the person who talks about River Song more than any other person I've ever met. I just want you to know this.
Really?
Yes. You bring her up.
I have seen 2 full episodes of Doctor Who, and one of them was that Christmas special with River Song.
So she's 50% of why you watch the show.
Well, she is 50% of the show I have watched. Yes, actually more than that, because the other was a regular length episode, so...
But we are talking about Minute 73 of this movie, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Frank continues harassing Janet, whose legs are frozen to the ground. He continues singing, "You better wise up, Janet Weiss. You better wise up. Build your thighs up. You'd better wise up." And we very briefly leave the lab and go to the criminologist's office for the criminologist to say, "And then she cried out." And then we go back to the lab to see Janet yelling, "Stop!" while wailing on Frank with her fists, pushing him away and past Dr. Scott and toward Brad, who valiantly tries to sucker punch him, ostensibly succeeding, because Frank then spins and falls back toward the transducer board ladder, momentarily dazed. And in the background, we see Riff and Magenta. Riff is dissociating real hard, and Magenta is right next to him near the transducer board, having an amazing time laughing about how all this is going and even bouncing around to the music. There's a sound of a bowl getting dropped, and then Frank lifts himself back up to begin singing, "Don't get hot and flustered, use a bit of mustard." Brad sings, "You're a hot dog, but you'd better not try to hurt her, Frankfurter." And then Frank looks at Magenta, giving her a nod to flip the Medusa switch, which turns Brad to stone. Frank walks a little past statued Brad, and Dr. Scott speaks, "You're a hot dog, but you'd better not try to hurt her, Frankfurter." And Frank again lets Magenta know to turn Dr. Scott into a statue by flipping the Medusa switch. "You're a hot dog," intones Janet, who is cut off early and turned into a statue. And from above, we hear Columbia say, "My God." And then we see her. She continues, "I can't stand any more of this." And that's the end of the minute.
Good job.
Thank you.
That's the minute.
It's nice. It's a good one.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you, so you think the reason Frank falls backwards is because Brad successfully punched him?
I don't think he actually punches him, but I think that we're supposed to believe that that is the case, because if you look at the trajectory of Frankenfurter after getting fist pummeled by Janet, he kind of stumbles over to Brad, who then punches, and then Frank, then his trajectory spins in the opposite direction to fall back. So at least from a stage combat point of view, the story that I think they're trying to tell is that he was sucker punched.
Yeah, I agree that's probably the story they're trying to tell. I do not think they did a good job of making it look like that's what happened.
No, I would agree with you.
Because, well, and for him to even be over there, he would have had to be knocked back a significant amount by Janet's little girl punches, which doesn't seem likely, and also she's frozen to the floor, so I don't know. But yes, I agree that's definitely what they were going for. It's interesting. Frank is very effective at fucking with people. That would be so annoying if you were Janet and you're upset and then this guy is like rubbing his ass on you and then just like flipping your bra straps. Oh, I'd be pissed.
You would be, would you?
Well, not if it was Tim Curry, but
what if it was me?
In general, yes. Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if like if you're in like a bad mood and I just start doing that? I'm gonna try it.
You absolutely will have opportunity to do that very soon.
Yeah? Well, how could you ever be in a bad mood when you're around me?
Well, I'm around you.
But yeah, Sean, what are your thoughts on this minute?
Kind of my big note, my one big note for this minute is, why is everything suddenly about Janet?
Yeah.
And not that it shouldn't be, but like, you know, Brad has been through everything that Janet has, and, you know, all three of them with Scott, like, they're all frozen by the transducer. But all of a sudden, it's, you know, you better not try to hurt her. I guess, you know, hurt Scott. You know, he's half, you know, the cripple's halfway gone already, so no one's going to miss him, the old Nazi. But, you know, don't try to hurt Janet.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because this comes right on the heels of Brad abandoning Janet to Frank's devices so that he can push Scott into the elevator, who probably doesn't even need him to do that since his arms work just fine. So,
well, and it's also Janet has spent the past several hours at this point in the film like hardcore cucking Brad, so why at this point does he go, oh, this is where I draw the line, you've been toying with Janet in a sexual way that doesn't seem to delight her, so now I'm going to get some bass in my voice and tell you to stop.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is a reaction to the fact that Frank is kind of sexually harassing Janet right before that they say that. I don't know why Scott is also feeling so protective of Janet. Also, I know Scott says you're a hot dog, but that is not at all what it sounds like he says.
Really? I think that's what it sounds like he's saying. What do you think he's saying?
Well, I think he is saying that. I'm saying his pronunciation of it is strange. He's like, it's like, you're a what the?
Oh, I didn't get that at all. To me, it's hot dog.
I don't hear the G, but anyway, it's just, it's interesting, but yes. I mean, and I agree, no, I know that he is saying hot dog. I'm just saying that the delivery of it is strange.
Have you seen or heard Jonathan Adams in anything other than this? He's got, you know, and you've discussed it in other minutes, the very peculiar accent that he has, and I'm thinking about it and I'm like, I can't think of anything else, like any other movies that I've seen him in. Like, is this the way he talks, or is this something he's put on just for, you know, this movie?
The German accent is definitely okay. Fake.
Yeah, he isn't naturally a German speaker, so this is just kind of a choice that was made.
A strange, and I'm already on record saying I don't agree with that choice, and I'm in good company, neither is Richard O'Brien. But yes, I did get some interesting context from the commentary on this minute.
Oh.
So Richard O'Brien was talking about what his vision was for the transducer behavior. And he said, what I wanted to see happen here was have a ray of light come around them and have them dissolve and disappear. That's what I wanted, that their bodies were in a state of flux. That's what I wanted. And then he said, when that reference was made somewhere between entrance and exit, I did not know what reference he was talking about. But then he said, but they decided to put them in these strange kind of plaster casts. So they had to find a position and get molded in it, which is a day of agony. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize that they literally got themselves molded in plaster. I thought that somebody just made, you know, made molds that kind of looked like them. That is horrible. And then he went on and on about how much he hates that they're on plinths. Mm-hmm. Which is fair, but he kept being like, where'd that plinth come from? That's a wee bit tacky. I mean, he hated it. But, which is, I mean, it's reasonable. Like, if they're Medusa'd, why did the plinth just appear? But, I mean, why anything? Why did their clothes disappear? You know? But, yeah.
Sean, have you seen the Rocky Horror Show?
No.
The musical?
Yeah, no, I have not seen it live. I saw... Was there like a BBC did a production like 6 or 8 years ago? I think I've seen it like on TV, but I have not seen it like a live performance.
So in the live show, they don't Medusa anybody. Mm-hmm. The transducer freezes them, but then what they do at this point is Magenta has, it's essentially like the sort of big puffy syringe looking thing that you use to like spray plants, and she's puffing hallucinogenics into their face so that they go loopy and they wander off. That's essentially what happens. And then Columbia doesn't get Medusa'd either, and I don't even think that we see Rocky at all, but she gets multiple like shots of this. And she just goes like, whoa, far out, man. And then she wanders away. So this is a very different feel than the Rocky Horror Show.
Yes, very. And, you know, Richard O'Brien's idea was interesting to have, like, there be light and have them dissolve and disappear and stuff. He kept saying, like, I don't know why they went with this instead. And I was like, well, probably because it was a lot cheaper, Richard. that just sounds a lot more expensive, what you're describing, but I don't know. I'm not a special effects artist.
What he's describing is very Willy Wonka-esque.
I mean, actually, I don't know how much it costs to have plaster molds made of people, but yeah, I don't know. To me, I would think the special effects were more expensive, and that's why they didn't go with that.
With the 1975 technology. Now he could probably, you know, he can go back and special edition it. He can Lucas it all up with CGI and whatnot. Richard O'Brien, please don't do that.
Ugh. Please. Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, and I understand where he's coming from with the plinths, but I'm like, well, I don't think those things would stand up if they weren't on plinths. So
I think it's
interesting.
It's one of those things where it's like if people are looking at the plinths, you've already lost them. Like they're like you.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think people who don't go over the movie with a fine-toothed comb the way we do, I don't think they ever think about or see those plinths.
Yeah, like I
Does
hadn't
this
noticed
mean
that.
That's Barry Boswick's dick.
What's that?
Does that mean that we are seeing Barry Boswick's, like, the...
No, I have to assume they are not actual casts of their genitals. That would be crazy.
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, because that's basically a full-body nude appearance for all of those actors, that seems.
So you're saying that they would use different dicks?
A stunt dick.
I'm saying it would be a... Yeah, I'm saying it would just be a dick they added on. Like, I don't think they, like, molded one guy's specific dick for it.
Could be so, wrong. Like, the Wilhelm Scream, there's just a standard Wilhelm dick that they throw into any movie. Though I like that this, the, like, it gets curiouser and curiouser. So there's a question of, like, you know, why aren't they wearing their clothes after their Medusa? Why are their clothes... Like, their clothes fall off. The clothes are there. I mean, we can't see. I don't think we see for Scott. But, like, for Janet and Brad, they're on the plinth. Like, at their feet are, like, the robe and the, you know, lingerie that Janet's been wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the Medusa just makes your clothes fall off. Except if you have a blanket on your lap and you're in a wheelchair. Then that stays put. I guess because it's a blanket, it's not clothes.
Well, his suit doesn't come off, though. Just his pants. Spoiler alert.
Just the pants? No, his suit comes off.
Yeah, it's... Well, no, I mean, she's saying when Scott reappears, he is dressed.
When he's reanimated. Un-Medusa'd?
Yeah, de-Medusa or whatever. It's interesting.
Is there a technical book? I know, like, for example, like... You know, like, we're talking about Star Trek Last Minute or Star Wars, like, those kind of science fiction, there's always, like, you know, kind of the fake technical handbook of, like, how the ships work and all that stuff. Like, is there a technical manual on, like, how this Medusa thing happens?
To my knowledge, no, but really there should be. And really, I think that we should do it. We should be the ones to make it. Because both Kelly and I have engineering degrees.
There you go. You're the experts.
Absolutely. I mean, we could ask friend of the podcast if Barry Bostwick had to get naked and get a plaster mold made of his dick, but that seems just terribly unlikely to me, especially since for it to have that level of detail, somebody would have had to, like, lovingly cover his dick in plaster in a way that I
volunteer.
Doubt happened. Well, and I mean, like, Janet has just, like, a bush situation. I doubt they were, like, carefully, you know, carefully sculpting her little pubes and everything.
Yeah. I think that is probably a merkin that they sprayed white and, like, put, I guess, like, spray fiber on it to attach to the statue.
I can't remember if I've told this story on the podcast, but I used to have super long hair, like elbow length, and I had it. My boyfriend's aunt is a hairdresser who is mostly retired, but she does haircuts for nuns at the local convent or whatever now. And during the pandemic, we were going over to her house to have our haircut, and I was like, you know what, I'm ready for a change. Let's just chop most of this off. And she asked my permission to keep my hair and use it as a hairpiece for some of the nuns who were losing their hair. Like, you know, she would, like, dye it and everything. And I was like, oh my god, yeah, absolutely. I'm glad my hair can be put to good use. However, I was telling that story to a friend a while ago, and I accidentally... I guess the word I was looking for was, like, topper or hairpiece, but I said that she saved it to make into merkins for the nuns, and the immediately, like, what? That was so funny. I was like, wait, I'm remembering what a merkin is. No, that is not what my hair was used for. Except maybe, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't. I just thought that was interesting context, and yeah, I think even if they do not have to mold your genitals, I think the idea of being covered in plaster and having to sit there, that just sounds awful. Yeah.
I would love that. I think that sounds like the coolest piece of art ever. Not of me. I not of me, but potentially
of me,
of you. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
that could be that could be a museum. You should be in a museum.
I love the end result, and I think that what they came up with looks really great and is fun and silly. I just, the idea of having to spend a whole day just sitting there in hardening plaster,
That's a kink.
That's a thing, yeah.
No.
Just not for me.
It's like, did you know that getting into that Grinch makeup for Jim Carrey took like 8 hours, and he did that every day for like a really long time?
Why did I think that you were going to go, did you know that getting into Grinch makeup is my kink? Like, I genuinely thought that that's where that sentence was headed, and I'm so happy it wasn't.
Oh my god.
Poor Brad.
Oh my god. Yeah, would that be me putting on the Grinch makeup or him?
Well, Brad's dead, so.
Oh yeah. Well, that doesn't mean anything.
Funny bit of trivia. So that's actually not not Barry Boswick's penis on the statue, but it is his balls. Those are his actual balls that they use. So.
Oh.
There you go.
Where did you learn this?
I just made it up.
We are incredibly gullible.
I'm sorry.
For instance, you could have said, ChatGPT told me, and
yeah.
Kelly would go, well, that's true.
I did briefly consider asking ChatGPT just generally how plaster casting is done, but then I didn't. But yeah, so what else you guys got?
I just wanted to say this could be my favorite bit for Magenta.
She's great in this.
Like, she goes from... and it's also potentially a Suze to Mary sort of continuity issue thing that is happening. Mm-hmm. She goes from bopping in one way during Planet Schmanet, and then even the beginning of the You're a Hot Dog, she's still bopping in kind of that chaotic sort of toddler sort of way. And then you see a close-up of her, and she's switched the way that she's bopping. She's now kind of leaning forward rhythmically. And I think that that's a very cool change, but definitely not something that I think was done intentionally. She also does a lot of leaning on things, and she flips the switch and then puts her leg down, and she is making a meal out of being in the background, and it's very fun to do. And when she does the flipping of the switch, there are so many times that I've seen people playing Magenta lose their wigs at this point.
I was about to say, I flip my wig all the time when I'm doing that, because I throw my hair really hard the way she does. Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking earlier about how Riff looks like. Yeah, so Riff is like in his K-hole, and then Magenta's on Molly or something. Like, she's into it. And yeah, it's like, because at first I'm like, oh, is she kind of getting turned on by, you know, Brad getting angry and making fists and everything? But then I'm like, no, she just loves this Medusa. Like, she knows what's coming. She knows the signal's coming from Frank, and she's really digging it. So yeah, good. Magenta
minute. I think a choice that Patricia Quinn clearly made for Magenta is Magenta loves fucking with people and like scaring people and everything. So anytime anything like that's going on, she's enraptured. Other times she's mostly bored or sleepy.
Yeah.
But yeah, whenever anything is happening that is upsetting to the normies, she's living. I guess this made me wonder, like, so I guess they were playing the music in the lab while they filmed this?
They were, yes.
Okay.
So if you look at any behind the scenes sort of footage of this, they do have a track going so that they can lip sync.
Yeah. And that makes sense. So yeah, I mean, I guess she would rate this song well. She seems to like it.
So I guess That brings us to a good point. We're at the end of a song.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, it's a good cut. So the minute literally ends with Columbia saying, "I can't stand any more of this."
That is true. So, Sean, you said that you actually like this song.
I did say that. Yes.
Did you mean those words in that order?
Yes. Yeah. That was not a thing I was making up on the spot. No, that's a thing I actually meant.
Yeah. Wow. Explain yourself.
It's kind of a banger. I mean, it doesn't make in context, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like the references to mustard and hot dogs, like it's fun for us as an audience. I don't know if it makes sense to, you know, why the characters are saying this, but yeah. It's a nice little bit. And I kind of consider like the planet Schmanet hot dog is all kind of like one thing. I know there's some talking in the middle. There's like a respite or whatever. Like I put all that in my mind. That's like one song.
It's the same track on the soundtrack, yeah. I want to say. So,
yeah. I struggle with, we didn't really go over this, but we should. I struggle with the repeated lines of "you're a hot dog, but you'd better not try to hurt her." Like
Frankfurter.
What does that have to do with him being a hot dog? You know,
When I was in high school, I had an Eastern European gym teacher who used to tell people that if they weren't like sharing the ball with their classmates, that they were being a hot dog, and I think that there's something lost in translation there. I don't.
It's possible. Yeah. It could be like the prunes thing.
I mean, yeah. I don't understand how he could be being very hot dog-like in this moment.
Yeah. I mean, I always just assumed, like, they're being like, "you're a hot dog because your name's Frankfurter," which, okay. But, like, is this the time to bring that up?
Well, also, yeah. Doesn't make sense that Dr. Scott says it, unless he's just repeating, like, because, you know, so Brad has a little bit, I mean, very little bit, it's just, you know, over the course of an evening or whatever, but, you know, so Brad has some history with Frank to, like, why would he identify him as a hot dog? You'd be like, okay, like, there is some history, they've exchanged bodily fluids, there's something going on there. But, like, with Scott, I mean, I guess Scott knows something. I guess he's been following from afar, like, you know, Frank and they're, you know, his research or whatever. But this is the first time that they've met. Like, he doesn't have that same relationship. Because it sounds like to me, it's almost like something you'd say to a friend that's like kind of going too far. Like, all right, you're a hot dog. Like, but you're kind of, you know,
take it back.
You're taking it a little bit too far, kind of thing. Like,
the
it's not
fuck
something
did you
say.
Just call me?
Maybe that's something people did in the 70s. They called each other hot dog.
Yeah. So what was your rating for this song, Sean, out of 5?
I'd give it a 4.
Wow.
But I also like.
What's your favorite
song?
Yeah,
I was going to say, my favorite song. It's a tie. I don't know if I can pick one favorite. I think, like, at the top, I'm going to say "Over at the Frankenstein Place" and "Hot Patootie."
Mm.
And I know how some people feel about that particular tune. I think it's a righteous banger. I love the Hot Patootie. That's a 5 out of 5 for me.
I have developed a new appreciation for Hot Patootie from doing the podcast and analyzing the lyrics more closely. It's still not a favorite of mine by any means, but I was going to say it's insane that song wasn't written for Meatloaf.
Yeah. Because, he owns it. And I'd say, you know, and that's probably as maybe more just listening to the soundtrack, just the song as a song to rock out to versus how it fits in with the characters and the film and the you know, the narrative and all that. Because then you've got, definitely high up there is I'm Going Home, which, you know, as a song, like from the soundtrack, like, I don't know, I'm not going to necessarily pick that out to listen to. But in terms of how it fits in with the film and the character and the story and everything else, like, oh, it's great. So I guess there's, you know, there's two different ways you can judge a song from a musical, kind of just judge it as a song you listen to and then judge how it, you know, fits in with the film.
Leandra, what's your rating?
This is my least favorite song of the entire movie. I hate it a lot. a lot. I would give it 0.5 out of 5.
Wow.
Oh.
Okay.
And not just because the lyrics are bad, but they are. If the music, if the lyrics were bad, that would be enough. If the song itself was bad, that would be enough.
Dianu.
It's. but it is also that they really didn't have to put this in. It tells really no story, and it's just odd and very bad in every way that I can think of, even to the point of just making up like a word salad at points.
Yes, yeah.
That's fair. I don't have quite that strong of a feeling about it, but it's kind of a nothing song for me for the most part. I do really hate, as we mentioned a couple minutes ago, I hate the apple pie line. Yuck. But overall, I'm going to say 2.
Wow.
Yeah, you're making me rethink my rating. Well, because that's a good point. In terms of, so this is, I think, Rocky Horror Picture Show as a musical picture is above average in terms of how the songs fit into the narrative. I think most, if not every song except this one, either furthers the story or tells us about some, you know, tells us about the characters. I mean, we learn both Columbia and Eddie talk about, you know, kind of getting picked up. We assume they're talking about Frank, or maybe Columbia is talking about getting picked up by Eddie. Like, you know, they describe actions that happen to them. They're not just singing to sing. You know, so overall, I think that the movie's very good. The soundtrack's very good in terms of it's not, you know, it's not all the action's going to stop and then we're going to have a song and then the movie picks up once the song is over. Like, the movie continues through the song for the most part. And yeah, other than mentioning the transducer, which, you know, how much does that really figure in? I mean, there's just some science-y stuff that happens that freezes them and turns them into stone. Like, we don't really need to get into the technical details and, you know, of how that happened. So other than mentioning, you know, saying the transducer will seduce you, yeah, nothing else through, you know, through Planet Schmanet and Hot Dog, nothing. Yeah, and it doesn't further the story. It doesn't really tell us anything about these characters. So yeah, I think I'm going to change it. What did I say? 4 out of 5? I think I'm going to go back to, I think it's a 3. I still like it. I still think it's an enjoyable song. Okay. But yeah, in terms of, does it fit into the film? Is it necessary? Do we learn anything? Yeah, we don't. You're right. It sucks.
Yeah. We learn things in the scene.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Right.
But not really through
this
song.
This is, however, one of the bits of music that gets stuck in my head all the time. Like, if I'm up against a deadline at work, as I'm typing something up, I'll go bum 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 bum, just for hours.
Actually, I like that part musically. I think it's fun, and it sets a nice it's a nice background score for this scene. It makes the whole thing feel kind of fast paced and like zany. So I do like that part musically.
I think that I would like it if it wasn't so very obviously a theatrical vamp. But that's really all I have for this minute. I mean, other than callbacks.
Well, Sean, Do you have any callbacks?
I've got two. I'll bring up two. I think they're both obvious, but there's the, you're a hot dog, but you better not try to hurt her. Oscar Mayer, Frankfurter, and then Hebrew National, Frankfurter. Mm-hmm. So I've got that. And then towards the end, when everyone's Medusa'd, or, you know, there are the three of them, Brad, Janet, Scott, you do the, how do you know it's a blank party? And you kind of fill in. Most of the places I've been where I've seen, they fill in like a local school. Like I grew up in New Jersey. So it was, how do you know it's a Rutgers party? Everyone is stoned.
That's nice.
That's fun.
So those are those are my callbacks for this minute.
I just have a couple more. When right before the mustard line, something along the lines of like, what do you use to jerk off when you're out of lube or something? He's like, use a bit of mustard, which would burn. I don't recommend that. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm speaking from experience or anything.
But you're speaking from experience, actually.
It's unclear. I'll leave that up to the listeners' imaginations. And then after Janet says, you're a hot dog, and gets Medusa, this is another opportunity to say, sluts never get to finish. And then the only other one I have is at the very end when Columbia says, my God, I can't stand any more of this. Then sit down.
Then sit down.
Yep. And that's it.
I have just a couple more after that. You can say, why do you go to the gym? And then Frank says, build your thighs up. Hmm. And when the criminologist says, and then she cried out, I don't know that I like this one, but it is one that people like to say. It's, fuck me like the whore I am, instead of stop. So that's fun, I guess. And
for them.
Yeah. And then there's this fun bit while the really bad bit of sound of like the bowl getting dropped, like the random metal clattering, Frankenfurter looks down and you say, lost your armpit. And then he looks down and he said, made you look. And you already did the, what do you do when you run out of lube? Use a bit of mustard. You go, shove a hot dog up your butt. You better not try and hurt her. Awesome, I'm Frank Reuter. And you do that again for Dr. Scott. I like, you're a hot dog, but you better not try and hurt me, you weenie. That's really fucking stupid. And then you go, who is Tim Curry? My God. Mine too.
Aw, that's cute.
And yeah, those are the ones that I know.
That's great. Yeah.
Alright.
But Sean, your time has come. Say goodbye to all of this and hello to Perry Button in the woods.
Goodbye, all of this.
Sean, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great fun to have you.
Yeah, I had a blast. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for doing the show. I'm enjoying listening and, kind of reliving all my Rocky Horror memories through the podcast. So it's been great.
Well, that's wonderful. And if you were alive and well, we would absolutely have you back on for our next podcasting adventure, which I think is going to be Shock Treatment, but as we know,
it's going to be Shock Treatment.
It might be Shock Treatment.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, if you can join us from beyond the grave, please do.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay. All right, but I guess let's finish this one up the same way we finish all of them with now.
You don't have to go home,
but you can't stay here.
So get the fuck out.
To the late night double feature picture show.